Are we in a post-truth era? Well, Oprah and other influencers are telling us to live our truth.
Speaking your truth is the most powerful tool we all have.
And Christians wonder what it means to say that Christianity is true. Is there no such thing as absolute truth? Well, on this episode of Christianity Still Makes Sense, we tackle these pressing questions and more. Welcome to the show that loves doubters. If you are doubting the traditional view of Christianity, you are in the right place. Here at Christianity Still Makes Sense, near apostate, now pastor and apologist, Dr. Bobby Conway, helps untangle the doubts that can deconstruct our faith. Bobby, your new book, Does Christianity Still Make Sense, comes out April 23rd, 2024. In preparation for that book release, we are doing a sermon series of the same name. Now, if people are listening to this, we suggest that they check out part one of that series at imagechurch.live and then click on watch. That would be really helpful for setting up some context for our discussion today. And if you haven't, no worries. So the first objection that you tackle and that we're going to touch on this episode today is the truth objection. Things like there is no such thing as absolute truth, or all truth claims are equal. What are some examples of people making this sort of truth claim?
Yeah, Tim, and thank you for mentioning the series. And for those that might want to just follow along in this, we will take on five objections. And the truth objection, as you mentioned, is the first one. And then we're going to get into the secular objections that come our way. We'll deal with the problem of evil, divine hiddenness. Then we're going to address the pluralistic objections, where we ask the question and answer it. You know, how can Jesus really be the only way? And then the moral objections, you know, how can there be such a thing as objective morality if there is no God to ground our moral decisions in? And so we'll look at those objections, and then we'll conclude with looking at the church objection that people get for not believing in Christianity. Maybe they've been wounded, or they've been hurt, or they've given up on church. And so to your point, as it relates to today's episode, the truth objection, you know, if this is the statement that we do here, you know, live your truth, you do you. It's what Oprah Winfrey said at the outset. But what does that even mean to live your truth? If I'm living my truth and you're living your truth, but we have to make a decision about something together, how do we live together? Do we always just live our own truth? I mean, what does it mean for us to be in community together, to live together? And so these type of statements, they might sound good. They might resonate with people. You do you, you live your truth. But these are claims that don't work in reality, and they don't foster relationships. They put us in protective shells. And so what we have to do is we really have to get at what is truth. And that was the big question that Pilate asked Jesus. And Jesus even said, I came to testify to the truth. He claimed that he was the truth. So truth is bigger than a proposition. Truth gets personal with Jesus. But how do we kind of get at truth? How can we discern statements like live your truth, you do you, all truth claims are equal? We know that that's contradictory. I mean, there's no way that that stuff can work. When you say all truth claims are equal, well, you can't look at the Hindu pantheon of gods and say all those claims are equal, because those gods contradict each other. In fact, that's how Plato and Aristotle and Socrates and Thales and some of the philosophers of old started to walk away from Hesiod and Homer and their beliefs in Mount Olympus and the gods there, because these gods contradicted each other. And so you could imagine in the ancient Greek world, you know, you just do you, you live your truth, you adopt your God, you live for the God that you want, but it doesn't work in reality. And so we have to expose the lie behind the so-called truth claim that people make, that there is no such thing as truth. I mean, that's a self-refuting statement. You just ask the person who says there's no such thing as truth, well, is that statement true? Yeah, that statement's true. Okay, well, then that's true. So we got one truth, so it's a self-refuting claim. I think the last thing I'd say, Tim, is this, before we carry the conversation forward. When we're trying to figure out what truth is, there's different theories that people have come up with, like the pragmatism or the coherence or the correspondence. The correspondence theory of truth is is the most popular and it's been around the longest. Pragmatism says truth is that which works. Well, it's nice to have a worldview that where truth works, and we do believe a lot of truth does work, but it doesn't mean it's always going to get you out of the right situation. Like truth might get you martyred. So that doesn't mean it's not true because you end up getting martyred on it, right? So pragmatism is William James. It was pushed by him. He lived in the 19th century, and this is a faulty worldview. But a lot of people get that way, and they just believe, yeah, whatever's practical, whatever works. Coherence is this idea of, well, whatever just fits together. If it's true, it's going to fit together. Well, a true worldview will have coherence, but you can come up with like Star Wars, and Star Wars can have coherence, but it doesn't mean that world is real. The correspondence theory, on the other hand, would say truth is that which corresponds to reality. Truth matches reality. So if I say I am a male that was born March 4th, 1973, that statement is true. But, you know, if you were going to prove that it was false, if I was only 4 years old, well, that would be easily disproven. So that's just a little bit of foundation work before we move ahead.
Well, you would look really old for a four-year-old. I'm just saying, not that you look old. Bobby's book, Does Christianity Still Make Sense?, will be released soon, and we need your help. If you want amazing limited time only perks such as Q&A with Bobby and a study led by Bobby himself and more, you want to join the Book Launch Facebook group. Now, space is limited, so scan the QR code on the screen or visit our social media for the QR code. We are going to get to some clips of a conversation that was had on the New Evangelicals channel with Tim Whitaker. But first, just kind of briefly lay out what are the worldview consequences of adopting a truthless worldview?
They're catastrophic, Tim. We're seeing it right now in our culture. Where you deny truth, you'll end up with no basis for morality. Because it's each person is their own master, their own moral maker. Friedrich Nietzsche, the father of postmodernity, was the one who was saying, you know what, religion is oppressive. It's just religious leaders trying to control us. We need to just pull up our bootstraps and we need to each figure out our own moral destiny. We need to become, the overcomer and strive to determine our own will. So it's a will to power. And really, it's the morality of power, and it's pretty oppressive. It's kind of like Machiavellian ethics repackaged in postmodern Nietzsche. And this kind of philosophy got picked up by Judith Butler, the feminist, and by Freud with his sexual ethics. But this is the kind of culture that we're living in. And it's very much of a deconstruction culture that says there is no morality and they just want to deconstruct any truth claims that people make. And so as a result of this, you have moral chaos. You have a cultural relativism, which also ensues. And this statement was said by Alan Bloom many years ago in the 80s. He said, there's one thing a professor can be absolutely certain of. Almost every student entering the university believes that truth is relative. If this belief is put to the test, one can count on the student's reaction. They will be uncomprehending that anyone should regard the proposition as not self-evident, astonishes them as though he were calling into question 2 + 2 = 4. And he writes that in The Closing of the American Mind. And boy, the mind has only closed more. So you end up with moral relativism, cultural relativism. You end up denying reality because if truth is that which corresponds to reality, but you deny that truth corresponds to reality, you'll end up denying reality itself to a certain degree. Then pleasure becomes our chief pursuit because if we really can't get at truth, or we are the ones that carve out our own destiny of truth, well, let's pursue pleasure. And then happiness becomes our goal. And then ultimately, we just end up in total chaos and confusion. So I just say, does that sound familiar, Tim? A culture like that?
Yeah, definitely. Well, one of the things that you did in the message that I encourage everybody to check out again, because this is really helpful, is you kind of gave this historical sketch of kind of how we got to where we're at in this, you know, essentially post-truth type of era, this relativism era. And so I would love for you to just kind of sketch that out maybe briefly in a minute or two. And if people want more details, again, I would challenge them to go over to imagechurch.live and click watch. But give us a little brief history lesson here.
So the big idea, I mean, Charles Taylor in his book, The Secular Age, which was, you know, a massive read. It's huge. It's very insightful. But he talks about, you know, before the Reformation era, there wasn't a lot of doubt and existential angst because it was part of the story of the West that a belief in God and that the world that we live in was something that was supernaturally created. And so what happens is the scientific revolution comes along, you know, after the Reformation, and then you end up in the Age of Enlightenment, and you have Rene Descartes, who is actually a Roman Catholic himself, and he's trying to react to, you know, basically scientism, that science can answer all the questions of life. And he becomes the father of modernity, of modern philosophy. And what Descartes did is he reduces kind of everything down to one's reason. So I think, therefore I am, is the popular statement. And so, you know, he sought to doubt everything. But the one thing he realized he couldn't doubt was his own existence. And so he realized it took his existence to even be thinking about his existence. So this then was a philosophy that began to, you know, split the upper existential world, so to speak, of the supernatural, and it caused us to live downstairs in a world of rationalism. And he couldn't see the consequences of this idea, but it would be picked up by even secular philosophers in time. And eventually you would go from this modernism where you're just trying to figure everything out. And then Nietzsche, he's kind of the father of postmodernity, and he starts breaking it all apart. But you end up with an author in the 20th century by the name of Jacques Derrida. So with Nietzsche, you know, he pronounces God is dead. In other words, he's no longer necessary. But then with Derrida, he pronounces the death of the author. You can't even trust the things that we read. And the irony that we talk about with Derrida is he's writing a book how you can't trust the author. You can't even get at what the author's intended purpose is, but we're supposed to trust Derrida that we can get at his authorial intent. So it seems a bit self-refuting, but of course that wouldn't bother him as a category because, you know, he can live with those tensions. But today we live in a culture, Tim, of postmodern deconstructionism. And basically this is a view that says, you know what, you live your own truth. Truth is relative. You can't know history. You can't trust authors. And so therefore it's just totally out of the question. And it's been picked up in universities, the internet, media, and film. But the deconstruction has now even been picked up through different critical theories, like critical race theory, that views everything through the Marxist lens of oppressor and oppressed and applies it to these different arenas like the LGBTQ. And so what we're doing now is we're just uprooting everything and we're just looking at things through the lens. That's the truth that our culture looks at things through, the so-called truth, that find the oppressor, find the oppressed, overthrow it. Well, what are you going to do? You're just going to create a new model of oppressed and oppressor. But unfortunately, this is kind of the culture we're living in, Tim.
Well, I think that is a great historical and cultural foundation for where we're headed in the rest of this show. We're going to start by kind of looking at some clips, and this is from the New Evangelicals channel. Tim Whitaker is the host of that, and he brought on a philosopher of religion named Tom, and Tom wrote a book called God After Deconstruction. And what they're doing in this hour-long episode that we're not going to watch the whole entire thing, is they are reviewing Tim Barnett and Elisa Childers' book, The Deconstruction of Christianity. So they're reviewing this book, but one of the key components of their conversation revolved around truth, this idea of objective and subjective truth. So let's jump into this first clip, and then Bobby, I want to get your
let's park here for a second on this objective versus subjective idea. So they break down, essentially, subjective truth is opinions and beliefs that you hold internally. My favorite ice cream flavor is strawberry, a subjective opinion. And then objective for them are things that exist outside of our heads, things that exist in the world around us. And Tim uses this this analogy in one of his in one of the chapters, talking about how he's breaking down objective truth versus subjective truth. And he says that when he's talking to students or something, he'll have his laptop on a podium, right? And he'll say, okay, is my laptop on a podium? And they'll say, yes. And then he goes, how do we know that my laptop is on a podium? And his answer is, drum roll, please, because we can see that the laptop is on the podium. And that's one of his examples for objective truth, right? The idea that it's outside of us. My concern, though, is that there's a difference between that analogy and, like, I don't know, the Bible that was written 2,000 years ago.
Right.
That seems to not always align in one unified, cohesive story. And also, we can't observe a physical resurrection, for example. So I just felt like it was a weird setup, because if that's what objective truth is, it exists outside of us. I'm not even going to say I disagree, but that example, well, of course we can, because, you know, of course the laptop is on a podium, we can see it. But taking that idea and then mapping it onto, and therefore the resurrection is true, it's like, right. I just feel like that that's a real stretch in the sense of it being a bodily physical resurrection. Now, of course, I would affirm that, but I think the difference is that I recognize that, like, I wasn't there, and I am taking a certain level of trust or belief, knowing that I can't objectively prove this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, and I'm totally with you. Just to put my cards on the table, yeah. I do believe there's objective truth.
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't believe is that I have full and inerrant access to that truth, such that my own experience doesn't tinge or shape or influence how I interpret that objective truth.
Okay, so I think what's going on there is my take, again, and I'm interested in your take, is that Tim is taking issue with the epistemological claim, how we know something is true. You immediately see he went from the correspondence theory of truth, which Tim Barnett in the book is describing, the laptop being on the podium, to how we know something, which is the epistemological claim, on whether or not something is subjective versus objective. And that's really important. So, Bobby, what was your take on that clip there?
I would say a few things. First off, I mean, in fairness to Tim, I mean, it's easy just to take a clip out of context and, you know, paint Tim like, oh, I believe in the resurrection because I believe my laptop's on the table. I don't think Tim would say it's that easy himself. He would recognize a faith component, but he's putting his faith in evidence that helps him to believe that there was this objective moment in history called the resurrection. Now, I would agree that there is, subjective truth, like in the sense that the way we perceive things at times, it could be subjective to us. But I would say that when it comes to objective truth, all of our subjective thoughts about truth aren't correct. But insofar as they correspond to reality, then they are correct. So if people were in the room denying that there was a laptop on the table, they would be making maybe a subjective truth claim that, hey, there's no laptop on the table. But I would say that they're objectively wrong. But Tim was subjectively saying that there's a laptop on the table, and objectively there was a laptop on the table. So I think his subjective self was right in that what he was saying as a subject corresponded to the object, and therefore there was alignment. And that's what we ultimately want in our claim. So we want to be as subjects speaking truth claims that correspond to reality. Now, another thing that I would say is the idea that I know Tim would be passionate about and defending is objective truth is objective whether we agree with it or not. Objective truth, is something that is independent of our thoughts about it on many things, right? There are some things that, are totally relative to us, like, I'm sick today. But when you're talking about maybe historical facts, or if you're talking about the sun, what time it sets, or if you're talking about, what day it is in the week, there are statements that we can make. And I think that it's true, Tim, that today is Thursday when we're recording this. whether somebody believes it or not. That's objectively true, that today is Thursday. So, then someone said, well, is there really such a thing as a Thursday? And that's another type of layering that we could get into. But all that to say, I think it's just a bit problematic when we think then that just because somebody says a statement like Tim is, that we just discount his whole lecture. I think if you listen to his broader thing, what he's trying to say is that there's good evidence for us to place our faith in the historical resurrection of Jesus.
Well, I want to get to this idea of certainty, and I want to point to a quote that actually you had in one of your books, Doubting Toward Faith, which is a great read for anyone doubting or deconstructing their faith, but not as good as Does Christianity Still Make Sense, which comes out soon. So I think one of the things that people struggle with is when people are doubting or deconstructing their faith is the idea of certainty. And when they see pastors or Christian influencers, they think that what they're saying is that they're saying this is true and it's absolutely certain and you cannot doubt that. And so when a pastor, you know, preaches on Sunday, sometimes it feels like or it looks like it's coming from a place of not having any doubt and being certain. And so that leads me to this quote that you read in your book. So I'm going to quote you here. It says, you say, we must avoid two extremes. One extreme, we have the philosophers like René Descartes, who you mentioned earlier, who seek certainty through doubting everything. And on the other extreme are those who doubt nothing in order to feel good about their supposed certainty. Neither is helpful. So Bobby, I want you to get personal here. And what response did you get from fellow Christian leaders and pastors and apologists when you started to express doubts? I think that will help you relate with some of our viewers here. Mm-hmm.
I think for the most part, I was received well on that. I think that people saw that I wasn't just trying to just cut down the Bible. I was just genuinely trying to, you know, place my trust in the best evidence that I could find. And there were times that Christianity just didn't make sense to me. And there are still things about Christianity that doesn't make sense. And every worldview will have things that don't make sense to people within it, if they're being honest. And so I think for me, coming to the end of my quest for omniscience was a good thing, because there's no way that we can know everything. We are limited, we're finite. And so we're all borrowing scholarship from others, and we're having to trust in, you know, what we believe to be the best evidence. But that doesn't mean we can prove it with 100% certainty. But I do think that it's dangerous to start rejecting something like the correspondence theory of truth. I think that that influence has come a lot from the deconstruction culture, and that can go back even to like a Jacques Derrida.
Yeah. So maybe briefly sketch out what response should we give as, you know, church leaders or Christian influencers to people when they doubt?
The Bible says, be merciful to those who doubt. And so I think that's really important. I think that we should show compassion. We should, you know, try to ask what's going on. We shouldn't take on the role of trying to fix somebody. We should be ministerial, pray for the person, journey with the person, and just try to help somebody through their process. Like for me as a Christian apologist, I do think that one of the errors of Christian apologetics at times has been to be so in our heads. I mean, there's things about the Christian faith that are hard to understand. We talk about a reasonable faith, but there's lots of things that just feel like it doesn't go with the common sense, right? And you see, falling manna. If God exists, miracles are possible. So I'm not denying that. But what I'm saying is you don't see that kind of stuff every day. Shamgar taking out an ox goat and whacking 300 people with it. I mean, there's some bizarre portions of scripture. Anybody denies that, they haven't been reading their Bible much. There's stuff that is just challenging at times. And I think that there's a lot of empathy that we can show for people. I don't think we need to just assume that they're wanting to walk away from the faith or they're wanting to destroy Christianity. I think we can just listen and love on people, but we should also be equipped as much as we possibly can to point people to the truth. And I do think that the Christian faith is a creedal faith. It's always been a creedal faith. And we have to have, some things that we're holding on to that are valuable. We can't just get so wishy-washy in the process and deconstruct it and basically say, well, you just live your truth. And you got a lot of people trying to do that in the name of Christianity. It doesn't really matter what you believe. They just see themselves as the ultimate arbiter over scripture. And they're going to end up, the funny thing is a lot of the people, even in the progressive camps, they end up giving their progressive interpretation on things. So they've got a way of seeing things as well.
No, I think that's really helpful. And again, this is a place for doubters. And so we want to encourage folks to doubt here. Doubt in the comments. Leave some questions. I think for me, the thing that helped me the most in my season of doubt was a pastor just being able to say, let's sit down on Fridays at 3:00 and you can bring me your questions and I'll do my best to answer them. And that was one of the most helpful things. He didn't shun me. He didn't shame me. He didn't say, no, why are you having these sorts of weird questions? He really sat with me. Any final closing thoughts here in the remainder minute of this episode?
No, I think that's great, Tim. We covered a lot of quick ground. I'm always aware in these moments that we leave certain things uncovered. But at the same token, I mean, it's better than a 60-second short, right? We got 25 minutes in today. So
that's right. That's right. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Christianity Still Makes Sense. If you have questions or comments or doubts or things that you would like us to cover, please leave them in the comments. We'd love to hear from you. And with that, we will see you on the next episode.